So that's about it. Oh, more happiness. But hey, that might not be such a big deal to you. So no reason for you to call 888-LEARN-TM unless you'd like to tap into more creativity and intelligence. Oh, if you do call 888-LEARN-TM, you'll find out a lot more than I can tell you. See for yourself. Did I mention you look younger? Hey, I can't convince you to start TM. I can only tempt you. Are you tempted yet? 888-LEARN-TM.
Views expressed on the following program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. This is Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome to Enlighten Your Life. We have a website, enlightenyourlife.com, which we archive these shows. Tonight's show will be archived there as well. And as you may know, we have four themes each month. We have the theme of mental potential, health, social behavior, and world peace. This month, interestingly enough, we have five Tuesdays. So we're calling our fifth Tuesday Blue Moon. The day we'll be talking about the arts. But tonight we're talking about world peace. And we have as a guest Dr. David Leffler. And David, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Paul.
Great, great. Now I'm going to give a little extensive introduction of Dr. Leffler, and then we'll start with our discussion this evening. But before we do, we'd like to mention that we are a call-in show. So you can call in, and Tom will give us the call-in numbers.
Yes, if you have a question for Paul or his guest today, go ahead and give us a call at local area number 425-373-5527. Once again, that number 425-373-5527. Or give us a toll-free call in Western Washington at 1-888-298-KKNW. That's 1-888-298-5569.
He's so good at that. He's really good at that. It's amazing. Anyway, Dr. Leffler, I'm going to talk about you a little bit, and you'll just have to, you know, not get embarrassed here. Dr. Leffler got his PhD from the Union Institute and University in Cincinnati. He did doctoral research on the topic of invincible military defense. He has other academic degrees, a BA in education, MA in the science of creative intelligence from Maharishi University of Management in Fairfield, Iowa, and also an MM in education from New Mexico State University at Las Cruces. He was a member of the U.S. Air Force for 8 years. He was assigned to the Tactical Air Command, United States Armed Forces in Europe, Air Training Command, and the Strategic Air Command. Military decorations include the United States Air Force Commendation Medal, the Air Force Achievement Medal, the United States National Defense Service Medal, and the United States Air Force Good Conduct Medal with one oak leaf cluster. Dr. Leffler serves as an associate of the Proteus Management Group at the Center for Strategic Leadership, U.S. Army War College, and is a member of the U.S. Naval Institute. He has given presentations on invincible defense technology at the Russian Air Force Academy, the Russian Academy of Sciences, and defense-related institutions in the USA. Dr. Leffler maintains a comprehensive list of invincible defense technology links on several websites, including a link to his 177-page doctoral dissertation online. And contact information for Dr. Leffler is available at www.invinciblemilitary.org. Now, we actually have a number of websites we're going to mention tonight, but I would like to remind our viewers, if you're watching the radio, that is, our listeners, that we archive any website that we mention in this show on our site, enlightenyourlife.com. So any website that we mention will be listed after the show tomorrow, probably by noon. Hopefully, I'll get these links up, and we'll have a link to tonight's talk. So don't worry about stopping the car to write down any of those URLs. We will have them all archived at enlightenyourlife.com. Now that we've covered the whole show here, just introducing Dr. Leffler, I thought we'd go ahead and talk to him. So, Dr. Leffler, can I call you David? Is that all right?
That would be fine.
Okay, good. And I'm Paul, of course. So, it says here that you are a director of the Center for Advanced Military Science, which is part of the Institute for Science, Technology, and Public Policy. And can you tell us a little bit about the Center for Advanced Military Science, what they do, what they stand for, what they're about?
Well, our think tank was first proposed by Major General Franklin Davis. He was a commandant at the Army War College in the early 70s. and he practiced transcendental meditation. And he predicted way back then in the 1970s that TM would have a very, very important part in this millennium, and his prediction apparently seems to be coming true. And the goal of our think tank is to promote invincible defense technology as a way to prevent terrorism and war.
Well, let's talk more about that later. I want to actually go back a ways and just talking about your particular experience, how you got into the military and then how you got into this idea of the development of consciousness. How did that story unfold for you?
Well, we have to go back to way back in 1974.
The Middle Ages.
Right.
Yeah.
And at that time, I was a student at the University of Wisconsin, Oshkosh.
Okay.
And I noticed my roommate, every morning he would get up and he would close his eyes and be very still for 20 minutes. And so I asked him later on what he was doing, and he said he was practicing transcendental meditation. And this guy really had his act together. He was very calm, very cool, collected. He did very well in school, and he picked up things really quickly. For instance, I was a guitar player, and he played guitar also. And, for instance, I would practice all night learning some little elaborate guitar lick, you know, to impress him and say, hey, Greg, take a look at this. And so I'd play it for him. He says, yeah, Dave, that's really cool. Let me try. And so he would pick up the guitar, like, immediately play it, you know, and even the whole night I had been trying to learn it, he would just learn really quickly.
Yeah.
He had something special that I didn't have, and I knew I wanted it. And so he said to me, well, Dave, you should try transcendental meditation. It'll make you a better musician. That's all he had to say, and I decided to do it. And there was no instant miracles, but sure enough, over a period of time, my musical abilities did play, and my scholastic abilities improved, and many other important things started happening to me, and I became much more effective and efficient.
You know, I forgot about this, but you are an accomplished musician as well, aren't you? I've forgotten about that.
And actually, that's how I ended up in the Air Force.
Interesting.
After studying 2 years there, I auditioned for the Air Force Band, and it's a very competitive process. I was told something like 100 or so or even more people auditioned to just get the one slot, and so I was very fortunate to be one of those people.
You're that 1% effect.
Yeah.
First 1%.
And so I was in the Air Force for nearly 6 years in my first enlistment. And when I had learned transcendental meditation, the day that I was learning, I noticed this article sitting on the table that had talked about General Davis and other military people who were practicing transcendental meditation. I had been told earlier by my friend that even a general was doing it. And I read it with great interest that all these military people were doing. And I thought, well, geez, if, you know, these kind of people, you know, thought to be very conservative are doing something like this, and there must be something to it.
Yeah.
And as I progressed after I learned to meditate and I started taking more advanced courses, I heard about Maharishi talking about invincible defense and how the military could use meditation to not only be better warriors, but to actually prevent wars and problems like terrorism and crime and other social ills like that from ever happening in the first place.
Okay.
And that idea intrigued me, and I remember coming back from an advanced meditation course where I had gone in deep meditation for some time, and I took an assignment in Europe. And at that time, it was the height of the Cold War, and the first thing they had me do was go through all this military training, for instance, chemical warfare training and all that kind of thing. And I remember going through that and seeing this movie of the Russians supposedly using these chemicals to actually practice. You know, our training, you know, we would go into this thing they called the confidence chamber, where we would be exposed to tear gas and we'd have to learn how to don our protective gear very quickly and all that type of thing. But supposedly the movie we were shown where the Russians using the real thing and their training exercise, you know, and this scared the hell out of me, frankly, and a lot of other people in our class we were watching. And I remember one of the officers there saying, well, geez, why do we hate each other so much? And why are we having these problems with the threat of war and nuclear annihilation and all these other types of problems? And I had read some of the things that the military had started doing, TM, and I said, well, look, all we have to do is meditate, and we can prevent this. And at that time, everyone laughed and, you know, thought I was crazy. But now there's a lot of scientific research we'll talk about later that shows this is really possible, and actually other militaries have already done this. They've already used meditation to prevent war and end war.
That's amazing. So I note that you went on and did your actual PhD work, and you are the first, I guess, the first person to receive a PhD in consciousness-based military science from an accredited school.
Actually, one little correction there. It was a consciousness-based military defense.
And I'm sorry, military defense. Yeah, so consciousness-based military defense. So I'm just curious if you could define that for us. What would be a consciousness-based military defense?
Well, basically, psychologists, people like Fechner and Durkheim and Jung, talked about theories of collective consciousness. But these theories of consciousness were never becoming the mainstream psychology because there was no way to prove them until now. And now there's been scientific research over 50 studies, including my doctoral dissertation, that shows that consciousness does have field effects and that the human mind can utilize consciousness to release the collective stress that gathers in a country or a city or other social system to actually prevent problems like crime, prevent problems like terrorism, prevent war. And so consciousness-based military defense is just the means for the military to use these human resource technologies to accomplish these goals.
Could you define the word field effects for us? What does
that
mean?
Well, rather than define it, since we're on the radio, I will use the advantage of that and use people's imagination. Suppose you have a big tub of water, Paul, and inside that tub of water, you float a bunch of champagne corks. And you grab one of those corks, and you start bobbing it up and down in that tank of water. So what's starting to happen is not only is that cork bobbing, but all of a sudden all the other corks start bobbing as well. So in terms of physics, you could kind of say you're creating a wave function, or in terms of consciousness and our analogy, you're enlivening that field of consciousness. So basically, you can create coherence that way. When people meditate, there's scientific research that shows that the two hemispheres of the brain begin to function more as one. And in a coherent measure, a way of doing this, they have these machines that measure the brainwave activity and also devices that map the brain. And you can see that these neurons in the brain are starting to fire together in synchrony in a different state of consciousness. And the research shows that this consciousness that one, the pure consciousness that one contacts during the practice of transcendental meditation has field effects. And so the idea then is that the military can use these field effects to prevent the enemy from arising in the first place. Basically, the goal then is victory before war.
So what you're saying is that the people doing this practice, doing this meditation, doing this deep meditation, they're actually able to have some effect on the environment, not without even interacting with the environment, other than by doing the meditation.
And that's right, and the research is really fascinating. I'll go back to the 1980s when I was first, just a minute ago, talking about the people, the brainwaves being more and more coherent. Well, they did a study that was written in the International Journal of Neuroscience, and they had one person, this was a blind study, they had one person meditating, doing a very, very advanced meditation program, which has shown the greatest degree of brainwave coherence in one room. And meanwhile, in another room, they had another person sitting down at a computer doing a computerized learning task. And what they found was that when the guy would kick in with this technique, doing the meditation, in the room nearby, the other person, his brainwave coherence went up as well, just like the person who was meditating, the guy who was doing the computerized learning test. So starting to see some kind of indicator of what a scientist would call action at a distance.
Right.
And so scientists became intrigued by this, and so there was another study also written in the International Journal of Neuroscience that they found that when a large group of people had gathered at a university during a summer break on the East Coast, meanwhile, back in a laboratory in Iowa, again, this was a blind study, they were able to measure levels of coherence being higher in people with these EEG machines than who were just practicing a very basic meditation technique, the transcendental meditation technique. And again, it was a blind study. They found that during that time when those people were doing those advanced techniques that showed the highest degree of brainwave coherence, the coherence went up in these people in Iowa. So one of the people who was on my doctoral committee, his colleagues in, realized that, well, if there's something going on in the brain, then we probably could measure it in the physiology. And so two of the most likely candidates they thought would be is one would be serotonin, which is a neurotransmitter. And other research has shown that when people have high levels of serotonin availability, they're less stressed, they have more well-being, you know, positive traits like that. And another candidate was cortisol. And other research shown that when people have low levels of cortisol, then they're less stressed. And so they decided they would try to measure those two things. And again, they did a blind study. So at the university in Iowa, Maharishi University of Management, they had business people in a nearby town there. They would measure their levels of serotonin availability and cortisol. And sure enough, what they found was that when there would be a large number of people meditating together, practicing these techniques, serotonin availability would go up and cortisol would go down. When the numbers would be small, the inverse would happen. And so there was no real connection between most of these business people and the people who were at the university. So we're starting to see something taking place in the human physiology that's indicating there's some kind of action at a distance being that's taking place here.
So I think it's interesting in a way we're on the radio, which is in a way a field effect. We talked about this in the past. There's some field effect. And what you're talking about is that somebody who has nothing to do with this meditation can be affected by a group of people meditating in their area. So that's like they're having an effect. The people don't even have to agree with the whole thing, and yet they're still experiencing more calm, more peace, more, you know, some of the effects that the people directly meditating experience.
And that's the beauty of it, Paul, because in a sense, you could say that, well, let me give an example. Right now, we're trying to capture Osama bin Laden, you know, and there's other terrorists around the world. And the terrorists have the free will to strike wherever and whatever time they want. And so if we had some kind of technology that our military could use to predetermine these people not to attack, then obviously we would have a great military advantage that could be gained from such a technology. So it doesn't matter whether Osama bin Laden is hiding in some cave in Afghanistan or if he's in Donald Trump's casino in New York City, we can affect that person at a distance not to want to do bad things. And so it's not anything where we're saying, we're closing our eyes and saying, no, we don't want you to attack or anything like that. No, these techniques don't work that way. Basically, all you're doing is practicing these very, very simple techniques. You're creating coherence, and that coherence is affecting the environment and making the people less stressed over when you have many, many people like that. And so when people are less stressed and they think more clearly and people are able to work out agreements and diplomats can work together and solve the common problems that we face in our world rather than resorting to protracted violence to try to solve those problems.
So you're going to reduce societal stress, which gives rise to things such as terrorism, correct?
I'm sorry, say that again.
You're going to reduce societal stress, which is what gives rise to terrorism.
Absolutely.
Now, David, we want to take a little break here and reminder of viewers, I mean our listeners, of our call-in number.
The number is to give a call to Paul or his guest today, 425-373-5527. Once again, that number, 425-373-5527. Or you can give us a call toll-free in the Western Washington area at 1-888-298-5569. Once again, that number, 1-888-298-5569. We'll be right back after these short messages.
Hey, got a question for you. How are you feeling?
Okay.
Just okay?
Yeah.
Anything in your life you'd like to improve?
Well, I could be healthier.
Anything else?
Stress. Stress gets to me.
Ever think about doing TM?
Yeah, I don't know if it's for me.
I understand. You know, it's easy to learn.
Oh, I've thought about it.
You could find out all about it by calling 888-LEARN-TM.
888-LEARN-TM?
Yeah.
So you think that TM could improve my health and help me cope with stress?
It might, but don't take my word for it.
Oh, I won't.
I didn't think you would. You know about all the research?
Not really.
There are 600 studies on the benefits of doing TM.
I suppose it takes a long time to learn.
You could learn over a weekend and notice benefits right away.
All right. What was the number?
888-LEARN-TM.
Oh, yeah. Hey, you're not going to tell me I told you so, are you?
What if I do?
Ha! It won't bother me if I'm doing TM.
Just make the call. 888-LEARN-TM. This message is for the 100 billion neurons in your brain. That's what they tell us we have, give or take a few million. Imagine if you could get those 100 billion neurons to work together. Well, that's what TM does. You know, transcendental meditation. Now, there's nothing I could tell you in a minute that would convince you to start TM unless you'd like to lower your blood pressure naturally without drugs. Then call 888-LEARN-TM. But other than that, there's nothing except faster recovery from stress. But maybe there's no stress in your life. So that's about it. Oh, more happiness. But hey, that might not be such a big deal to you. So no reason for you to call 888-LEARN-TM unless you'd like to tap into more creativity and intelligence. Oh, if you do call 888-LEARN-TM, you'll find out a lot more than I can tell you. See for yourself. Oh, did I mention you'll look younger? Hey, I can't convince you to start TM. I can only tempt you. Are you tempted yet? 888-LEARN-TM.
Spread the word. You don't have to settle for the usual talk radio. Now there's Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back to Enlighten Your Life. Our website, enlightenyourlife.com, will feature any website mentioned in tonight's talk. We have Dr. David Leffler here, who has a PhD in consciousness-based military defense. We've been talking about the idea of consciousness-based military defense. And actually, before we move ahead, I want to refer people to your website, drleffler.com. Again, we will put the link to this site on our website, enlightenyourlife.com.
Oh, one little change there. Actually, it's www.davidleffler.com.
Yeah, you know, I got that wrong, but it was nice of you to fix it. Sorry. Anyway, davidleffler.com. And you said there's some links there. There's a very robust, in addition to the link to your dissertation and description of your bio and your wife, it has a link, some up-to-date military links, or what is that?
Yeah, basically that is my personal website.
Okay.
And whenever some development takes place in the world regarding invincible defense, I try to link to that site. So it's one of the most, hopefully one of the best sites, because it tries to deal with all those various places. But people can just, if they want to remember this, just think www.strongmilitary.org. And if they go there, that's the link to the Center for Advanced Military Science. And if they look for my bio, there's all kinds of links from my bio to various websites. So just remember strongmilitary.org.
Okay. So we'll list that one as well on our site. And I noted in one of those sites you described something called conventional versus the invincible military model. And I wonder if you could explain that dichotomy, those two different models of the military.
Okay, well, up till now, our typical military model, what happens is that there's social stress. Say there's some kind of disagreement between two sides, maybe two countries. And so when that stress starts to build up, the disagreement becomes more and more apparent, and the two leaders of the country, what they usually try to do is first send in diplomats to try to resolve it and come up with some kind of agreement to make everyone happy. But if the stress is so high that they're unsuccessful in doing that, then what happens eventually is those stresses get so high that it outbreaks in some problem like war and terrorism. And so, you know, when that happens, you know, the enemies are being created as the stress gets more and more prevalent. And so what happens then is a war or a terrorist attack. And so then after that, the military is supposed to protect the nation, and so they're sent in to try to subdue the enemy. But unfortunately, by doing that, even if they're victorious, they're creating more stress. And so when you look at it on a very broad picture, for instance, when World War I happened, the militaries were sent in to subdue the stress, and the Allies won that particular war. But did they really win? Because what happened was is they sowed the seeds for World War II, because Germany felt They had gotten a raw deal, and so somebody like Hitler was able to rise to power because he took advantage of that stress and built on it, and the stress built up, and then there was another war. And so that war then, of course, led to what scientists have called, military scientists have called the Cold War, or some even called it World War III. And again, there's a lot of stress. Fortunately, that war never broke out very big, but there's all kinds of other little problems in Vietnam and whatever, Korea, where the stress would bubble up and cause problems. And so that's our typical military model, that the military goes in there and unfortunately has to kill people and break and destroy things. But there's a better way to do it now, and because we have a better understanding of scientific theories, particularly quantum unified field theory and the effects of consciousness, that we don't have to use that model anymore. We can use something better. And so since we're paying our military to protect us, they're the ones who preserve our culture and our way of life, then we can use that military to dissipate the collective stress that leads to the war, that leads to making enemies, so the enemies can be prevented, and hence we have victory before war, and the military breaks that war cycle. And so the military is fulfilling its function. Even people like, for instance, Ronald Reagan always talked about he thought the military was doing its job if it wasn't at war. And we talk about deterrence. Well, we can even go beyond deterrence, because actually deterrence comes from the Latin root, which means fear. So it's a fear-based defense. And so the problem with fear is that, well, for instance, if someone's afraid of you, then what they try to do is come up with some kind of weapon system that's even powerful than what you have, so they can have more fear from your side. So, you know, it just goes back and forth like that. But if you have something that's based on the opposite of fear, that eliminates fear, then the military becomes invincible because it has no enemies. And that's why another name for this is invincible defense technology. So invincible means incapable of being overcome or defeated, unconquered, or subdued. And defense means to defend against attack, you know, to make your country safe from danger or harm. And, you know, basically the word technology means applied science. So when you have invincible defense technology, you have the best defense available, victory before war, nip it in the bud, prevent the enemy from arising in the first place.
So in other words, you're saying the military could play a completely different role in that they would disallow violence from arising.
Absolutely. And even if this would fail, there's much research done on the Transcendental Meditation Program, over 600 studies, that show they would be better warriors. For instance, they'd have faster reaction times. They would think more clearly. They would have higher moral reasoning. They would make the right decisions. And so if they do have to go to war, then they can end the war as quickly as possible and not make the kind of mistakes that we've seen made in the past months.
So in other words, they're in a stressful environment, but they're more likely to maintain balance and intellectual, you know, distance, the ability to deal with the stress and to act in a more civilized fashion in the midst of that high stress, because they can release the stress.
And there's another consideration,
better judgment,
here too, that traditionally our militaries, you know, travel in groups. For instance, a battle group can be 5,000 people and higher. And so just imagine if we would train these people in a battle group, at least 5,000, ideally even more, in these techniques. By the time they would get to the place where the stress was starting to come about, suppose there's some stress thing going on in the Middle East and they're about to go to war, by the time the battle group would get there, they would dissipate the stress. In fact, ideally, an ideal situation, we could have a large group of a military, say 15,000 people on every continent, and that way we could cover the world globally and no enemy would arise. And so they could have that goal of victory before war and never have to fight the war. Obviously, that would be to the military's advantage. I mean, you think about what's going on in Iraq right now. They've had these deployments after deployments, and these poor men and women who keep having to go back to Iraq, you know, their families miss them. They're in great danger. They're suffering from problems like post-traumatic stress disorder and all sorts of other terrible things. We can prevent all of that in the first place.
So looking at this technology, you have this innovative technology, an ancient technology. How is this being received now in the military?
Well, it's interesting. It's actually been done by other militaries. It hasn't gotten a lot of press. But for instance, the country of Mozambique, if one looks into the history of that country, basically they had about 15 years or so of a war of independence from Portugal. Then after that, they had about another 15 years or so of civil war. So basically, they had a country of a country of 30 years of war. The economy was in shambles, all sorts of problems. The president of Mozambique heard about this technology. He read the research, and probably what he thought in his mind was, he says, well, this is good research. It's published in leading peer-reviewed journals. It's already been field-tested during the first Lebanon War. What do I have to lose? I'm already the poorest country in the world. Why don't I try it? So basically what he did was he had his members of his cabinet learn the technology, including people in the Defense Department. And so they taught about 3,000 of their ground and naval and air forces these techniques, particularly the more advanced TM City program, which is I was talking about earlier with the research that showed the greatest degree of brainwave coherence. And sure enough, the United Nations called Mozambique peacekeeping mission one of the most successful ever. And right now, scientists are studying it and saying, well, why was this so successful as compared to other peacekeeping missions the United Nations have tried, which obviously haven't met those kind of results? Also, there was it was also used in Ecuador. One of the people who's an advisor to the Center for Advanced Military Science is Lieutenant General Jose Villamil, and he's a former Vice Minister of Defense of Ecuador. And he was in a similar situation of collective stresses building in his country. He could see that war was inevitable, and he had learned the TM program. And he was at the point where he was just getting ready to retire, and he realized, you know, he was already the Vice Minister of Defense. He just wasn't going to really get any higher. What did he have to lose? He wanted to do something for his country, and he didn't want to see it to go to war and have all this unnecessary loss of life and destruction. And so he had members of his military learn these advanced transcendental meditation techniques, and he also had civilian volunteers help as well, and they all meditated together. And unfortunately, they weren't able to get a large enough group that they could actually prevent the war, but what they were able to do was raise the morale, and everything in their warriors became more effective and efficient, and the war ended very, very quickly. And he attributes that happening due to his soldiers doing these techniques.
It's amazing.
And I should also mention that there was a study done, this was done by civilians, though, and they had an independent review board of scientists here in the United States that predicted they would help dissipate the war that was going on in Lebanon. This is the first Lebanon war I'm talking about now. They also had an independent review board of scientists in Israel as well. And a philanthropist from the president of AT&T, which is a big conglomerate at that time, put up the money to do this social science experiment. And so they predicted in advance from other studies they had done what they thought would happen during the war. And sure enough, some incredible things started happening. The war deaths in Lebanon went down 71%. War injuries dropped 68%. And the level of conflict fell 48%. And cooperation by the antagonist rose by 66%. And this was published in a leading journal, the Journal of Conflict Resolution, which is edited by Yale University and is thought to be one of the leading journals in its field. And at that time when it was published, it was quite a startling finding, and obviously a lot of scientists said, hey, this is just too good to be true. But as time has gone on, these types of effects have been measured again and again, and now there's over 50 studies showing that this human resource technology actually works.
So this technology has a good scientific basis.
Oh, yeah.
Does seem to work. And, you know, so let me ask you, how would you see the military changing if this were implemented?
Well, the thing that would be the most important thing is that obviously they wouldn't have to go on these deployments, that they'd have a large enough group, then they could just stay at their bases and they wouldn't have to leave their families, and all they would have to do is practice these techniques twice a day in a large group. And then military could still do the other things that it does, and, you know, just in case something would happen, they would be ready. But basically, the military would become, well, it's already an honorable profession, would become even more honorable because they would be preventing the war from happening in the first place, preventing the enemy from arising. So the military, of course, would exist. It's just that its technology would change. And obviously, if you look at the history of military science, they've used different technologies. And, you know, if you think about it, in these last months, they've been talking about how we want to give our warriors the best armor they can get, you know, and all that type of thing. And then people have been sending money so they could buy the latest armor and all that type of thing. Well, why not have an armor that, what's called in ancient literature, Rashtriya Kavach, which means armor of the nation. Give the soldiers a way to create an armor for our nation to prevent the enemy from ever arising in the first place. So when we send our warriors out in battle, we want them to have the most advanced technology available. Obviously, and the most advanced technology is this. This works completely different from the destructive means of technology that we've used before. This is not that at all. It's something that is actually progressive and helps society. And
you know,
so, and since we pay these people to protect us, we want to make certain that they actually accomplish that job. So it's to the military's best interest to consider adopting this most advanced technology of preventing the enemy from arising in the first place.
Now, one thing we talked about on other shows, we've commented on actually an article I wrote once called, which talked about, you've heard of DEFCON 5, where there's the defensive conditions with people talking about military preparedness or alertness regarding nuclear incidents. I actually rewrote this as PeaceCon 5 with the idea that we could have levels and levels of peace. In other words, we could have, with these military experts creating invincible peace, we could have a situation where they would create such a powerful sense of peace around the country that the war could not arise. And it's just a different angle of what you're talking about.
That's very good. I like that.
So the idea is that peace itself can be optimized and, you know, such that war just can't get in. In other words, it's just like health. If health could be optimized, disease can't get in. But the idea of having a peace optimization group, or in this case, this military technology, an invincible military group, which creates such a powerful effect of peace, if your country is radiating peace, then we'd expect that it doesn't get entangled in war and doesn't become a target for terrorism.
You know, and I think the people who are in the military that may be listening to me now, you know, they're very, very intelligent people. And as I think they realize as time goes on that, you know, it doesn't have to be the military who does this. You know, the group that was done in Lebanon, for instance, was civilians. You know, we could pay, some millionaire could sponsor a large group of people to do this. The government could do it. It could be civilians. But if you think about it, we're paying our military to protect us. And so if our military is not protecting us, then we shouldn't pay them. It's simple as that. You know, we have to cut back on government. So I think that's why they're going to get into this pretty soon, as soon as they realize they have this as an option.
Well, think of the military who've been to war are not as excited about it as those who haven't been.
Yes, absolutely.
The veterans are going, you know, maybe we didn't need to do that. You know, that maybe there would have been a better way, you know, than that. So, you know. So actually, we want to take another break here and mention that we're a call-in show, and we'll come back in a couple of minutes.
We'd like to go ahead and give those numbers out. If anybody has a question for Paul or his guest today, give us a call at 425-373-5527. Once again, that number, 425-373-5527. Or if you're in the Western Washington area, give us a call toll-free, 1-888-298-KKNW. That number, once again, 1-888-298-5569. We'll be right back after the short break.
This message is for the 100 billion neurons in your brain. That's what they tell us we have, give or take a few million. Imagine if you could get those 100 billion neurons to work together. Well, that's what TM does. You know, Transcendental Meditation. Now, there's nothing I could tell you in a minute that would convince you to start TM unless you'd like to lower your blood pressure naturally without drugs. Then call 888-LEARN-TM. But other than that, there's nothing except faster recovery from stress. But maybe there's no stress in your life. So that's about it. Oh, more happiness, But hey, that might not be such a big deal to you. So, no reason for you to call 888-LEARN-TM unless you'd like to tap into more creativity and intelligence. If you do call 888-LEARN-TM, you'll find out a lot more than I can tell you. See for yourself. Did I mention you'll look younger? Hey, I can't convince you to start TM. I can only tempt you. Are you tempted yet? 888-LEARN-TM. Hey, got a question for you. How are you feeling?
Okay.
Just okay?
Yeah.
Anything in your life you'd like to improve?
Well, I could be healthier.
Anything else?
Stress. Stress gets to me.
Ever think about doing TM?
Yeah, I don't know if it's for me.
I understand. You know, it's easy to learn.
Oh, I've thought about it.
You could find out all about it by calling 888-LEARN-TM.
888-LEARN-TM?
Yeah.
So you think that TM could improve my health and help me cope with stress?
It might, but don't take my word for it.
Oh, I won't.
I didn't think you would. You know about all the research?
Not really.
There are 600 studies on the benefits of doing TM.
I suppose it takes a long time to learn.
You could learn over a weekend and notice benefits right away.
All right. What was the number?
888-LEARN-TM.
Oh, yeah. Hey, you're not going to tell me I told you so, are you?
What if I do?
Ha! It won't bother me if I'm doing TM.
Just make the call. 888-LEARN-TM.
Write it down, shout it loud. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM. Now, wasn't that fun?
Welcome back to Enlighten Your Life. On the web, enlightenyourlife.com, we archive all these shows and we put all the links on that we mention each night. Tonight again, we have Dr. David Leffler, a PhD in consciousness-based military defense. And we've been talking about the implementation of Transcendental Meditation as a technology in the defense arena, what the defense, what the military could do with this technology. And just to get down to brass tacks, how would you implement this program right now, say, in addressing the situation in Iraq? How would you, you know, if you were put together a prescription, what would we do with this technology right now?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that I have some really impressive former military people at the Center for Advanced Military Science who have put together a really good proposal, which we've been showing to various defense leaders and other people in our government trying to get them interested. And there's different ways this could be approached depending on what size of a group they would want to put together. But basically, one way it could be done is we could take a nearby country, say Jordan or somewhere that's near Iraq, and create a coherence group there. It could be civilians, it could be military, whoever, just as long as we would have the right mathematical threshold of people to do that. There's a formula for that, the square root of 1% of the population that you're trying to influence.
Okay.
So it would be a very, very small group. We could do that and make a lot of good changes. But in military, generally you want to have redundancy. So if something goes wrong, then you have something to fall back upon. So we'd like to even have a really higher number. So, but it could be easily done that way. It could be we could even have a group, say, in the green zone of Iraq. Or even better, we could have the military people of Iraq, the Iraqi military, learn these techniques, because basically you need to keep that group going twice a day.
Right.
And after we leave, we would want to have a group there to maintain the peace. So that would be the best way to do it, is actually teach their military and have that group become permanent. So what we would create then is what's called a prevention wing of the military. And this could provide maybe 2-3% of the country's military would be these people, who these advanced meditators, whose their main duty would be to meditate twice a day. They could do some other duties, but basically their main thrust would be to practice these techniques in group twice a day.
So it's obvious there's a tremendous amount of societal stress in Iraq. They could use some reduction of stress. And what you're talking about is kind of a refrigerator effect, to coming in, putting people around Iraq where they're not in a war zone, but they could have some effect on that area by their proximity.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And there's another approach you could use too. And for instance, back in the 1980s, there was an experiment done that was published in the Journal of Offender Rehabilitation, which is the leading criminology journal. And at that time, the square root of 1% of the world's population was roughly about 7,000 people. So they had people gather at Maharishi University of Management from all around the world. People came from China and Japan and United States, Israel, Germany, all the countries around came together who had been trained in these advanced techniques for a very, very short time. And the amazing thing that happened was, as well, that group was meditating together, about 7,000 people. Deaths due to international terrorism dropped 72%, and international conflict decreased 32%. And this study used data that was provided by the RAND Corporation. So it was a very, very powerful finding in a very prestigious journal. So if we want to really do something about the war on terrorism globally, then obviously we could do this by just getting a large group together, say 15,000, and we could do this from one of our military bases in the United States. And again, as I mentioned earlier in the program, ideally we would want groups of, say, 15,000 in every continent, and then we could be certain that we'd nip all the terrorism problems and crime and all these other social problems in the bud.
Well, let's take a little bit of a different tack here, and let's talk about the results of in the U.S. of our engagement in this conflict, in terms of the impact on the lives of the people who are coming back, and we have the people who are, having post-traumatic stress disorder, as well as just having come back completely changed or stressed from this experience. And then also the wounded, you had some program for them. If you could talk about the effects of this program. There's been some research, I think, on post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yes. For instance, there was a study done by Brooks and Serrano that was published on Vietnam veterans. And the study used random assignment, and they had people diagnosed with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and they either were taught transcendental meditation or went through a psychotherapy program. And this study was published in the Journal of Counseling and Development. And the results were very clear. Compared to psychotherapy, 3 months' practice of the transcendental meditation program for two short periods a day brought significantly greater reductions in 8 of 9 measures, and these included emotional numbness, anxiety, depression, alcohol consumption, insomnia, family problems, unemployment. And so this is very, very startling finding, because a lot of these treatments aren't working. And particularly, there's other things as well. You know, when we hear every day, we're listening to the news, they say, you know, so many other of our brave warriors died in Iraq or died in Afghanistan. And it's not really giving us the total picture, because fortunately, our military medicine is very, very good. And a lot of people say in World War II who died now in Iraq are being saved because we have this modern medicine. We have helicopters, and we can get them to our fine military facilities and really great doctors and nurses and other healthcare people and save a lot of lives. So, but what we're not hearing so much about is a lot of people are being wounded. You know, they've lost a leg, they've lost an arm, or having all kinds of other problems like that. And even after going through all these terrible things, our warriors, we have to really salute them, because a lot of them still want to stay in the military and serve their country. And this is very, very laudable. And what would be more laudable than to have these warriors all get together, practice transcendental meditation? They can eliminate their PTSD problems, the post-traumatic stress disorder. They can be employed in our military and still protect us. Just because they don't have a leg or an arm, they still have their mind. They can use their mind to create peace.
Yeah,
to accomplish the goals of the military. I mean, for thousands and thousands of years, we've been the goal of the military to prevent battles. In fact, the leading Chinese general, Sun Tzu, in a book that was written 1,000 years ago, The Art of War, he says, quote, "For to win 100 battles is not the acme of skill. To subdue the enemy without fighting is the acme of skill," unquote. So this general was saying this 3,000 years ago. Now we have a scientifically validated technology that our soldiers could use, even if they've been wounded, to accomplish that goal. So, I mean, think how amazing the possibilities, what we could do with these wounded soldiers. Not only would they become happy again, but they would fulfill their destiny, and they could create something that's never been created before, and that's world peace.
And there's a very large number. I mean, we keep hearing about how many have been killed, but there's just far, far more many who have come back wounded, far more of them. Now, my understanding is that the Transcendental Meditation Program is approved for VA benefits. It's a VA benefit, but unfortunately it needs to be prescribed.
Right.
By a psychologist.
Yes.
So that's interesting because what you're saying in this particular study is that the psychology didn't actually show measurable results in comparison to the TM technique, and yet it's the psychologist who's the gatekeeper for whether they get this technology or not.
Exactly. And there's also another problem, too. And right now, the VA is swamped already with all the veterans from the other wars, and now that we're having people coming in with very, very serious problems, they're having very difficult financial problems as well. And so it has been approved for them to use transcendental meditation, but it has to come from their discretionary funds. And so obviously there's not many discretionary funds to go around. And that's why we need to get people in our government, our senators and people in the House of Representatives and other people to actually have money designated for this purpose, for invincible defense, for transcendental meditation, to get rid of these problems with post-traumatic stress disorder. And even other things to consider, too, is the VA is having all kinds of other health problems. And there was one study that, for instance, showed that people use 87% less hospitalization when they practice transcendental meditation because they would be more healthy. So you think about it, disease, get rid of the dis, and you have ease, and then people don't get sick.
Well, I don't know if you see the symmetry here, but there's an interesting symmetry going on because there's been the complaint that we don't have enough armor for our people going to Iraq, and now I hear we don't have enough funding to help them when they get back.
Right.
So the thing is, it's kind of odd. We can't protect their head, we don't have the right helmet, and you can't fix their head when they get back because they don't have the right technology. So,
but
I mean,
we also need to give our soldiers, you know, mental armor. So if they do go over
saying,
there,
yeah.
Even if they do have to fight, they won't be affected by the war. And when they come home, the war won't be on their minds anymore, that they'll be happy and fulfilled.
The sense is that people have these stress from war, and they lock them in for the rest of their life.
Exactly.
If they don't have a way to release it.
I'm sure there's many World War II vets who are listening to us right now who are still having nightmares and that kind of thing, particularly if they see some World War II movie like this new one that's just been come out about Iwo Jima. And already people are having flashbacks to this experience and the terrible things that they had to go through in war.
A lot of those people never talked about it.
Yes.
And they never do talk about it. So the idea is that stress can be released. They've obviously experienced things that none of us have experienced. They've been in war zones. A lot of us have never seen a person killed. A lot of us never seen a person, you know, a dead person, you know, except maybe in a mortuary. These people have seen people blown up and killed and their friends and all that. That's a tremendous stress. So, you know, what you expose yourself to becomes part of you. And this technology evidently can help them release that stress and then turn them, as you're saying, into a peace-creating individual, not someone who's just kind of carrying a lot of weight. So, you know, that's a great idea to have the, you know, wounded take that role. So, you know, we're getting a little short on time, but what would be some action steps that people could take? What could they do, you know, in order to further this thing, in order to encourage more use of this in the military or in their own lives? What are you thinking?
Well, the simplest thing they can do is just talk about it, because there's been research that shows whenever a new idea comes along, people need to hear about it, say, 6, 7, 8 times before they'll accept it. So just talking about it is just raising collective consciousness. So no one has to do any hard sell anything. Do a soft sell and just talk about it and make our leaders aware that such a thing is possible.
Are you thinking they should, you know, come to your website, read about it, think about it, talk to some people about it? That's one thing they could do.
Absolutely, and talk to your politicians and have them draft resolutions and legislation and get a bill sponsored. Even that, even if it wouldn't pass, at least it would get people talking about it and seeing that there's such a thing that could be done, and make our diplomats aware that they can achieve their goals and be more effective and efficient and come to agreement by having the military practice these techniques and get them to do their job as well, to prevent conflict, war, and terrorism before it even starts.
Now, I'd like to go back a little bit to something you said earlier, and you talked about the rise of stress between countries, and yet at the same time, we can talk about the rise of stress within a country breaking out as international conflict. And so, I mean, this is before the conflict happens. It's almost as if an individual country is war-prone because there's so much stress in that country. Just like you could say an individual is more likely to get into a fight or something if that individual is under stress. So I think there's also a role here that the individual can see that they could play in terms of making our country less war-prone, less likely to get in a war, less likely to be a terrorist target, if they could contribute to the peace quotient, you could say, of the United States through this meditation.
And there's a real easy way to imagine this, Paul. If you have a forest and you want a green forest, every tree needs to be green. And so if you have people who are at peace with themselves, then they'll have a peaceful society. And meditation allows you to, transcendental meditation allows you to be at peace with yourself and seek the quietness in it. So that gives you that possibility, and obviously to your individual benefit to practice it, because there's all sorts of other things that you can gain. You'll be more effective and efficient in what you do, and so you can do less and accomplish more. And so from our military and from their point of view, we're having all these cutbacks right now at a time of war, and they're in a situation where they have to do more with less. So if they learn transcendental meditation, the research shows that they can do less and accomplish more.
So here in the Seattle area, we have a website called PugetSoundTM.org, which explains how you can learn this program in our community in various places. We have lectures on the east side as well as in West Seattle and sometimes in North Seattle. And we invite you to see that website. There's also the TM.org website, which is a very thorough description of this. And, you know, we believe that you yourself can become a peacemaker to influence our society at a distance in the direction of peace by establishing peace within yourself, that peace starts at home. And you yourself can also contribute to the peace quotient of the U.S. And I think that's what Dr. Leffler is talking about on a personal level, in addition to the military applications.
Paul, there's one little point I think we should discuss that we haven't got to yet. And that is, if you think of all the billions and billions of dollars that we spend on defense, on doing things that don't work, there's no research that I'm aware of that shows that our strategies we're using now, like bombing, actually create peace and prevent terrorism. Yet we continue to do it because we've just done it for so long that everyone, that's why we do it. We've done it like that before. But when you have research that's published in leading journals like Social Indicators Research and Journal of Conflict Resolution and Journal of Social Behavior and Personality and on, we could do this, we could have our military learn these human resource technologies. It would cost less than the cost of one B-2 bomber.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Leffler, I want to thank you for this vision of possibilities for the military and for us personally, and for converting this world to a peaceful world using these technologies.
There's one quote I'd like to end with from my military friends who are listening to this. It's from the air power pioneer General Julio Duhaime.
You got 30 seconds. Go for it.
Victory smiles upon those who anticipate the change in the character of war, not upon those who wait to adapt themselves after the changes occur. So let's get going on this and prevent enemies from arising, victory before war.
Okay, well, thanks so much, Dr. Leffler, and next week we'll be talking about the arts.
Views expressed on the preceding program are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. This is Alternative Talk, 1150 KKNW, Seattle.